With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable podcast. I'm your host today, Jake Jackman, standing in for Kev DeVries. You can get us on Twitter at EPL Roundtable or email us at the show, eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hello, my name is Thomas Nygren. I write about Liverpool for a Swedish website called lfcsv.se.
Hi, I'm Steve McGookin. I'm a Spurs fan from Belfast and I'm a former chairman of the New York Spurs Supporters Club.
Thanks so much for joining me today, guys. We'll set up the topics, and the first one is probably one that keeps coming up on the show every sort of 3 or 4 months, but it's VAR. It seems to be the hot talking point this weekend. Obviously, there's disallowed goals at Chelsea that prevented West Ham getting a point. There was one at Newcastle that prevented us from winning the game. And there was another one today in the Arsenal game when they opened the scoring. All differing degrees of controversial nature. But the PGMOL have come out today and apologised and sort of said that they'll learn from the experiences this weekend and hopefully take some lessons away from them, which is, it doesn't do a lot for the teams that have suffered, but I guess it is at least a statement of some sort. Just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on the decisions themselves. And is there anything that we can do to sort of improve VAR in the short term, or is it just going to be more of the same and it maybe it's going to be something that needs to be looked at the end of the season?
I think it's a very tough question, because if it was up to me, I think they could remove the VAR completely from the Premier League. I don't think that the benefits are big enough. We're talking more today about referees or VAR decisions than we did before the system was implemented, and I thought it would be the opposite. You can't celebrate a goal until you've seen the replay, and that takes away a big part of the special feelings when your team scores. I was happy yesterday that Conor Cody's goal was disallowed, but when you see a player celebrate like this with this crowd and then they just take it away, it feels like they're ruining a big part of the sport. But I guess the VAR system is here to stay, so hopefully they can make a few things better. One thing that I would like them to do is that I'm not sure that this would make things easier, but I think they should stop watch everything in slow motion, because every foul looks a lot worse when they watch it in slow motion. And today it looks like almost as long as you touch each other, it's a foul when you're in the penalty area. And I think that that's not the way I want the sport to be played. I like the change that they've made for the offside calls, but I would like them to remove the lines completely and just simply go by the image. And if you can't see that it's an offside with your eyes, then just let it be, so that we don't get those tight offside calls that we've seen in the last couple of seasons. As I said, I think it's better this season, but I'm not completely satisfied. Perhaps one thing that they could change is to use the VAR in a way that the managers can challenge a decision in a way that they do in ice hockey, at least here in Sweden, so that they only use the VAR when a manager challenges the referee's call. In that way, they wouldn't find things that nobody notices. I don't think anyone would have complained for an offside before McAllister's goal today, for example. It was an offside call. It was the right decision, but it felt wrong. The two decisions yesterday, both the Newcastle goal and the West Ham goal, are evidence that the system doesn't work. We still rely on what the people watching, making a decision from what they see. We still see mistakes, but today it's even harder to accept them. And I guess the best solution is simply to transfer referees to the league in the same way that they do with players, because in the end, it's up to the referee to make a decision. If he's on the field or in the VAR room, the best way to make sure that the decision is the right one is to have the best man for the job. And perhaps the best men for the job isn't only English referees. So I think that that would make it a bit better. But as I said at the start, I'm not the biggest fan of the VHR system at all.
Yeah, I honestly can't remember another weekend since VAR was introduced, what, 3 seasons ago now, that its reputation was so thoroughly, cumulatively, and effectively shredded. And I think every game over the weekend had a contentious VAR decision, most of which could have changed the outcome of the contest or at least the momentum within the game. So I think rather than just review those 2 specific decisions, there's maybe a case to be made to look at how VAR operated right across the league this weekend. Because I think what players and managers and fans as well want more than anything else is consistency, is a sense of consistency. And they want to know how the process works. They want, you know, they want that information to be explained to them so they're all on the same page. And I don't think we're all on the same page, as Thomas just said. You know, he would prefer that we did away with it. But I mean, for example, the situation over Jesse Marsh's red card came from the ref not using VAR to address the incident that had got him so riled up in the first place. And, you know, as an observer of American sports, I thought for a moment that we were going to get a sort of classic baseball ejection scenario where Marsh maybe thought he was entitled to kick dirt all over the ref before finally leaving the field. And again, the inconsistency in the Michael Oliver situation at Nottingham Forest where, you know, he didn't agree with the VAR decision and then overruled him himself. You know, that was something that it should at least be explained, or we could get a better understanding of the thought process that went into it. But the fact that we currently have anything but consistency in how the system works is leading to more people in football, in every aspect of football, to lose confidence in its operation. And I know, and Thomas just proved it, it's always been a divisive issue among fans. And I'm generally in favor of the use of technology, but, you know, at risk of sounding like a disillusioned Brexiteer, this isn't what we voted for. You know, we're 3 seasons in. We should have been able to work out any kinks in this by now to a point where everyone involved in the game is happy that they'll get fair treatment from the people running the system. And unfortunately, I think it seems that, you know, the human element, that's what's turning people against something that's designed to correct specific human errors on the field. And I think Tony Pulis put it correctly on 5 Live today when he said that the problem isn't with the technology, but it's the people using it. And I think we need to look at all the aspects of the decision-making process. So the more examples from the same weekend are looked at, the better. And what better weekend to pick than the games that we've just experienced? So what specific changes can we make? There are 3 things, I think. Danny Murphy, again, raised the possibility on Match of the Day last night of former players being involved in the review process. And I do think that's something worth considering in some form. Secondly, should there be time limits on the decision-making process? Absolutely. We shouldn't end up adding 3 or 4 extra minutes simply because there isn't a consensus between the ref on the pitch and the review crew. But another thing that I think could help is a measure of accountability and transparency. And actually, this is something that I always thought would improve the game even before VAR was introduced. We already have managers and players giving their post-match opinions sometimes when they haven't had an opportunity to settle down if a game ends controversially. Why not have the match ref come out half an hour after the game to address any controversial decisions, the cards he did or didn't give, or just to explain his thought process at crucial moments of the game? It wouldn't need... I don't think it would need to be any longer than 2 or 3 stock sentences that most managers come out with, but it would actually help fans who have just watched the game understand why it ended up the way it did. And 30 minutes after the game would give him the chance to debrief with his VAR team so they could get their stories straight. But I do think the absence of anything like that for now is only going to make it more likely that the choice will eventually come down to, you know, do we keep VAR as it is or do we chuck it completely, rather than what they should already be doing, asking how everyone can contribute to improving it. I generally agree with a lot of what Thomas said, except the one thing where he mentioned the challenges. And again, if you go down the road of American sports, that where you're penalized for a challenge that isn't effective, a challenge that doesn't work, that's a nonsense, because you get to the last 10 minutes of a game and you're out of challenges. That means that, you know, a clearly egregious foul can't be challenged if it's not picked up by VAR. So I don't think that, I think that's a non-starter. There'll always be human error in the game, and that's partly what gives it the unpredictable excitement that lifts it above, you know, just a sterile game like cricket. But as I said earlier, we've had a few seasons now to at least understand why people are still upset by it. And you know, if football doesn't understand that, then football can't fix it. And, you know, much as the review of the two incidents this weekend is a good start, I think we can go a lot further.
Yeah, I think it's worth touching on as well the sort of offside given in the Aston Villa game yesterday, because that wasn't a VAR mistake, that was an official mistake. But it just shows the inconsistency of the referees, and that a lot of linesmen would have let that play go on and then raise their flag, whereas he raised it early, and they've obviously been told not to do that. So it's just a lot of inconsistency game to game. It's sort of, it depends which officials you get as to the decisions you'll get. And I think yesterday with the two decisions that we've spoken about, they were both sort of penalised for fouls and goalkeepers, which has always been a murky area in football. Yeah. And I think a lot of referees are so keen to give the fouls and goalkeepers for a lot less than they would on other defenders. Yeah. So I think that's partially what happened yesterday. But me watching the Newcastle game live, I did think there was something off with the goal. Just, it was such a weird goal that you don't see very often, that you just thought that there must have been something. There must have been a foul in there. When you look at it, if anything, the Newcastle players have been fouled more so than the goalkeeper. But just one of those things. I don't think it's good that Mike Dean and Lee Mason can go from refereeing to retiring from refereeing and becoming VAR officials. I think that's probably not a career path that should be praised, because there's obviously a reason. There's a reason why Lee Mason was taken off Premier League games last season. Right. And he's still having a say, which seems a little bit wrong. But it's just a big learning curve. I think that I also think a lot of the, I don't agree that every single division needs to be looked at by VAR. The referee says this is so. If they said in the Manchester United game, today, I saw that Odegaard pressured Eriksen in the middle of the park. I didn't think it was a foul. I saw there was contact and I wanted the play to go on. And then if the referee, if the VAR referee goes, well, that is what happened. If you didn't see a foul, we don't need to look at it. They should just. Right. It seems that the people in the VAR box are re-refereeing the game, which is what they've always said is not going to happen. I feel like it goes from one extreme to the other. So I'm sure maybe next weekend we'll see a lot fewer VAR interruptions, and there will probably be a case for there to be one. So like it goes from extreme to extreme.
Yeah.
And then it'll come back to what it's been like this weekend in a couple of months' time. But yeah.
I also agree with Thomas's point about expanding the pool of referees, not just, you know, as you say, with the retired referees, but actually broaden it out. You know, there are FIFA referees that can be brought into that pool from all over. And if that's accompanied by even just a little bit of transparency or accountability, I think we'll have more of an understanding as to how they come to the decisions that they do.
I think there's also a case that you could have foreign referees from other leagues being the VAR official and not having to be in the country. Like we have that technology now. We don't need to steal them from other leagues. We could just use them when they're not being used. Exactly. There's lots of things that could be done. But I agree with the time limit as well. I think that should be implemented. If they can't come to a decision within 2 minutes of a clear and obvious error, it obviously isn't one, and the original decision stands. I think that would be. So I think the delay today for the writing goal that was disallowed was about 5 or 6 minutes. It was ridiculous, really. And it was the type of decision that would never have been made before VAR, which kind of beats the point of it. But yeah, I think that's enough on VAR. I'm sure we've covered all over the English and international media over the next few days. So yeah, we'll leave that one to one side. Yeah. And we'll move on.
There is one thing just before we leave it. I'm wondering, I mean, you guys probably know more about the various stats that go on than I do. It would always be intriguing to me to know if a team gets a goal disallowed because of VAR, who scores the next goal in that game? Does it have any impact on the momentum within the game? And if there's a way to actually calculate how disadvantaged a team would be for having a goal disallowed. But I just raise that off the top of my head. I would be interested in a stat like that.
I think it'd be interesting. I think some teams would probably react and want to make the point, whereas others might have their shoulders dropped. It might wake the opposition up.
Exactly.
Good have a look. I don't have the stuff. But yeah, that would be interesting to see. But yeah, we'll move on now to Liverpool. And Thomas, we'll let you take the lead on this one. Six games gone. Two wins. One quite emphatic. The other, a very late equaliser. A very late winner against Newcastle during the week, unfortunately for me. But the rest of the game, it's even a case in the Newcastle game, the performances haven't been great. It seems like they're missing something that they've had in previous seasons. I just wanted to get your thoughts on whether there are signs of a decline at Liverpool in the current squad, or do you just think it's just teething problems at the start of the season and we will see a return to Klopp's sort of free-flowing best?
If you look at the start of this season, I think we have more points than we have deserved, because we were lucky against Newcastle to win in the end. We came back with 10 men against Crystal Palace. We could easily have lost that game. So I think we've been lucky. But I do think it's harsh to talk about the decline of the team when a couple of months ago we were just a few goals away from winning everything. We haven't started in the way I hoped, of course. And in a way, it reminds me of the season after COVID, where we lacked energy from the start and fought against the difficult injury situation. What you can say so far is that there are a few players who are past their prime and needs to be played in a different way. We have seen the best from Jordan Henderson, James Milner, Roberto Firmino. They are still good players, but I think they're good squad players, not as starters in every game. And the injury situation made us use a player like James Milner a bit more than I think Klopp wanted from the start. The big issue for us has been the midfield so far, where we have missed Thiago a lot. And since we've also been without Keita, Jones and Oxlade-Chamberlain, we've been very short of options and been forced to play a few players a bit more than I think Klopp wanted. Both Harvey Elliott and Fabio Carvalho have done great, but they're too young to be relied on in midfield. If you look at the starting 11 when we played Manchester United away, we had Henderson, Milner and Harvey Elliott. And to me, that isn't a midfield who go to Old Trafford and get the 3 points. If we had started Fabinho, Thiago, it would have been a completely different situation. So the injury situation is a problem. And I think that once we can get that sorted, if we can get that sorted, I think we'll come back to see the old Liverpool again. Because we had an injury on the Obiota during pre-season, and then the suspension on Nunes took away our chance to rotate up front. So we had to use the three players we had for three games. And the injuries on Matip and Konate made it impossible to rotate at the back. So we had to play Joe Gomez from start every game. Of course, a big issue here is that we are in this situation because it's the second time that we have too many injuries too early in the season. And I think that that is something that Klopp and the rest of the staff need to look at so that we don't find ourselves in this situation again. A problem is that we have a couple of players who are a bit injury prone. If you look at Naby Keita's career in Liverpool, he has been out more than he has been available. It's the same thing with Oxlade-Chamberlain. It's a bit the same way with Thiago as well. And since he's such an important member of this squad, we can't be without him as much as we've been at the start of this season. And apart from that, we have a couple of new players who need to find their place in the team. And if you look at a signing us like Darwin Nunez. He's a completely different player than Firmino, who used to play up front. And perhaps I think Klopp needs to figure out how to use him to get the best out of him in the games. And the same with our young midfielders. Harvey Elliott has started this season good, but I think his role has been a bit too big. Yesterday, Klopp used him as one of two midfielders next to Fabinho, and it was almost like we played without a midfield for half an hour. So we have a few things to fix until we get back to our best, but I think we have the squad to come back to compete at the top of the table, because even though we've started this season very, very bad, we're 6 points behind from the top and we have 32 games left to play. So I'm not very worried, but of course I would have. The thing that is annoying is that we can't really start the game at our best, because we've let in the first goal in every game apart from the Bournemouth game, and that is something that we really need to fix to be in the game from the start. We can't come from behind every game. We were lucky to manage against Newcastle because was it maybe a couple of inches on offside call on Isak before he scored the second goal, and if that would have been against us, we would have lost that game. So Klopp needs to find a way to get his players back and to be at the pitch when the game starts, not after we concede our first goal. So hopefully we can have our players back after this international break and get a bright start when we play Brighton, because we have games both against Manchester City and Arsenal after the international break, and if we can win those games, we are back competing at the top.
Yeah, no, it is interesting because the two projects, the Liverpool project and the Spurs project, kind of went along on the similar track for a long time, because I think Klopp took over in 2015 and Poch took over in 2014, and those two projects essentially were the markers for each other, and of course it culminated in the 2019 Champions League final, after which we of course went completely off the track. I think, as I was saying to you earlier, Jake, it's way too early to extrapolate anything as dramatic as the beginning of a decline for a team or a manager. And especially with the new players that Liverpool have brought in to freshen things up. I mean, once they start to gel together and there's real competition for places, I think they'll definitely pick up where they left off last season. And Thomas is right about missing Thiago. He could very possibly be your most influential player. I think also they'll probably miss Sadio Mane more than they were expecting. Certainly, you know, with Salah misfiring the same way that Son is for us. But there's more than enough quality, I think, in that squad for them to come good. And I think they just need to play together a few more times. I mean, obviously, it wasn't the start to the season that they wanted. And they did look a little out of sorts in yesterday's Merseyside derby. But, you know, they're only two wins away from being top of the league like everyone else in last season's top four. And, you know, obviously the Bournemouth game showed that they could score for fun when they all clicked together, even if they weren't then able to build on that and go into the next game against United successfully. But I think everyone at this stage is on a bit of a roller coaster for a while, but it'll settle down. And confidence and consistency, I think, is always the key. So I don't think Liverpool have too much to worry about at this stage. But, you know, having said that, and I think Thomas hinted at this, you know, they've got a tough run of games coming up. I think they play Wolves next week, and then they're into like a tough stretch. So, you know, leaving aside their European games for now, I think it's getting into that stretch of games and doing okay in those is going to be really important for them. And you mentioned Naby Keita and the injuries. I saw a story today that said that Klopp didn't include Keita in the Champions League squad. Is that just related to his injury, Thomas?
As far as I know, it's related to the injuries, and it's quite a short Champions League group stage this season. So I think he needs to play in 5 or 6 weeks to be able to play in the group stage. So perhaps the injury is big enough for him to be out of the group stage, because I think he would be in the squad if it wasn't for that.
Yeah.
I'll ask you a couple more questions on it later, Thomas. We will speak a little bit more about Liverpool, but we'll move on to the final topic. The transfer window has finally closed. It felt like it had been open an age. And as always, we normally like to have a quick discussion on who we think are the winners and the losers of the transfer window out of the Premier League clubs. We'll start you first, Thomas.
Well, of course, it's hard to say so close after the window is closed, but I think there are many teams that looks better now than before the window opened. I mean, if you look at a squad like Nottingham Forest, they brought in over 20 players. And if they stay up, I think they will be the winners in this window. But if they go down, they will be the losers. So there are two teams who stands out to me if you look at the losers of this window, and that's Bournemouth and Leicester. I don't think they have strengthened the teams in the way that they needed to. I'm not sure that Bournemouth even tried to strengthen the team too much. And they seem to have chosen to rely on the team that took them to the Premier League. And sometimes that's a wise decision, but their squad looks a bit thin to me. And Leicester should have strengthened, not just... not this old Fofana. I think they needed to change a few things in the squad for this season, and they haven't done it. So perhaps they don't trust Rodgers to spend the money anymore. And the next transfer window, I guess that he won't be there anymore. So perhaps that is the decision they're standing on. It's hard to say much about the other teams today, because there are a few teams who paid a lot of money, and if the player turns out to be successful, the windows will be good. I think both Spurs and Arsenal have had great windows looking at it now. And I think that Newcastle have done very well because they've come into this era in a wise way. The signings of both Botman and Isak can turn out to be very good business, since they are both young, talented, and can be marquee signings in a few years. And as a Swede, of course, it's fun to see Isak do well, even though I didn't celebrate when he scored against Liverpool, of course. Manchester United have paid a lot of money, too much money, if you ask me, for the players that they have signed. But if the players they have bought makes them a better team, perhaps it will be worth it, because they have the money, they need the players. So the price perhaps isn't the big issue for them. As long as the transfers work out, it will be worth it. And if you look at Antony today, he did very well. Martinez in the defense has done well. So even though they paid a lot of money, if that could take them back to the top, at least back to the Champions League, it would be worth every penny they paid.
Yeah, these are always great conversations to sort of kick around a few days after the window closes, because we probably won't know who's actually won or lost the window until the next window. You have to look at, you know, which team strengthened in the places they needed to, who was able to get their first choice players in and who wasn't. There were situations where players who didn't move this time, where the situation may shift by the time of the next window, or even the one after that next summer. So there was maybe a bit of a waiting game going on for some teams. And you also have to look at players that a team might bring in who doesn't work out for whatever reason. So then there's a hangover problem at that position. And it was kind of funny, I think, as Thomas was saying, that when Erik ten Hag took over at Man United, you know, people thought they were going to spend their way out of trouble. And now the same thing's being said about Chelsea, especially on the back of their new ownership. At the other end of the table, again, I totally agree with Thomas. You could probably say that Nottingham Forest will either have won or lost the window, depending on what they do with this entirely new squad that they've brought in. Also agree with Thomas on Arsenal and Newcastle had very good windows, especially since everyone is going to be watching closely how Newcastle will be spending their money in the next sort of two or three windows as well. I thought it was interesting watching the Brighton-Leicester game today. You know, Leicester lose Fofana and Schmeichel, and then you have unsettling transfer talk around Maddison and Tielemans, and they seem to have just lost their compass completely. Whereas Brighton, on the other hand, can sell players like Cucurella and Bissouma and Mope, and they're just on a roll. And that's partly due to a mindset that comes from Graham Potter. And the same thing, I think, with Thomas Frank at Brentford. If you get your team to think they're unbeatable, after a while they start to believe it. And it's also probably a reflection of some of the things Brendan Rodgers has been saying publicly. Recently, if you go around saying that you've had a bad window, then, you know, sooner or later you do. As for Spurs, our fans are never satisfied. I mean, traditionally, they're just not. And they feel they're entitled to ask the questions they were asking in the couple of days run up to the window closing, simply because we didn't do any late business. That was partly because Conte and Partici identified the targets early with the aim of having a full pre-season to work together. And also, when you look at the players who moved on deadline day itself, were any of them really a must-have for us or even an upgrade on who we already had, with the exception possibly of Fofana and maybe Arthur Melo? I'm not sure they would be. And, you know, as I said earlier, if a player isn't going to move, like the Bastoni situation that we had, then you move on and you decide then if you're going to go back in at a later date. So, if you look at what didn't happen towards the end of the window, that the Yannick Carrasco story, I think, was apparently always a rumor. Likewise, I think the Dan James story might just have been his agent stirring the pot a bit to see if there were any other takers out there. Our biggest issue for this window seemed to be a sense of confusion or the lack of prioritizing of shipping out the players Conte didn't want. So a lot of things got left to the last minute in that direction. But we should have been in a position where it wasn't necessarily dependent on one in, one out, beyond, you know, the obvious need to balance the squad. But overall, we have a better squad today than we did a year ago. So I'm happy with that. And Conte seems to be playing our window down, saying that we're still a distance back from the big spenders in the league. So I'm fine with that, too.
Yeah, I think in years gone by, the team that we have claimed to have won the transfer window has often struggled. I think it was Fulham a couple of seasons ago, Aston Villa last season. So the fact that we've not really come to a consensus probably suits every team because nobody wants that title. And I do think that's a good point on Brighton and Leicester. Maybe you could make the case of Leicester perhaps maybe have been better off moving on Maddison and Tielemans as well and much earlier in the window and had that time to sort of give a fresh look to the squad. I mean, Leeds did it in the same way. If we'd have been sat here last year and we'd have said they were going to lose Calvin Phillips and Rafinha, we'd have thought there would have been certainties for relegation, but they seem to have brought in a lot of good players and they've sort of started the season quite well. So sometimes you need to make those difficult calls to push on. And I think maybe Leicester might regret that in a few months' time. And then they might even have to lose those players for the cut prices, whether that be in January or next summer, if things continue to go.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
As they are, but we'll move off transfers for now. We'll move into the club-specific questions. We'll start with you, Thomas. We spoke about Liverpool a bit earlier, so we won't go for a wide frame on the club. I'll just ask you about a couple of individual players. The first one, Trent Alexander-Arnold. He got brought off early yesterday. It seemed a little bit strange with the game being at 0-0, but perhaps it was a planned substitution. How have you sort of viewed his start of the season? Because there's been criticisms of his defensive work at times, and he also doesn't seem to be creating chances at the same rate he has in previous years. Are you concerned about his start of the season, or do you just think it's one of those poor patches of form and he'll grow into the campaign as it progresses?
Well, I think he struggles a bit with his form. As you said, he has made a few bad decisions defending, and he doesn't create enough chances going forward. So it reminds me, as I said earlier, it reminds me a bit about the COVID season, where he also looked a bit tired and couldn't find the players up front with his passes in the same way as he usually do. And of course, Alexander-Arnold, we rely a lot on him. He's one of the most important players in our build-up play, and he's a world-class player, and he has been since he was a teenager. So of course, we hope that he will be that every game. But he was in this way 2 years ago as well, when he looks tired. He doesn't run back in the way that he usually do, and it feels a bit like he doesn't believe in the way that he usually do when he's in form, because the way that he and Salah plays together when both are at their best, there aren't many teams who can defend against us when we get that going. And this season both have struggled, and perhaps it's a bit of Mohamed Salah's struggles that has made Alexander-Arnold look worse, because both have been, I think that right side has been a problem for us, because usually when we don't score, it's that side that we can rely on, where we have two world-class players. Alexander-Arnold has been in the World 11 a few times, and Salah has been maybe one of the best strikers in the world in the past season. So I think that we need to get both these two players going if we are going to compete for the title this season. And when you look at Alexander-Arnold's defending, that has always been an issue. I think it was he made some steps in the right direction last season, where he looked a bit more solid going back at the back. But this season has been a bit back to his old mistakes. And part of it's the problem in midfield who hurts him, because when he is going forward, we don't have the midfielders to covering behind him. Fabinho has taken a big responsibility defending for him. And previously, Jordan Henderson has managed to fill in behind Alexander-Arnold when he goes forward. And Jordan Henderson hasn't been at his best this season, and now he's out injured. We've played Harvey Elliott on the right side a few times, and he isn't defending in the same way. So I think that it's we need a bit of stability on the right side to get him firing again. If we can get Salah going and maybe find a bit more solid players in midfield who can defend behind him when he goes forward, I think we'll see the old Alexander-Arnold again. But I fear that we have to wait a couple of more games, because usually he needs a rest before he can be firing again. 2 years ago, it was almost a blessing in disguise when he was taken away from the national team, because that gave him a rest. And perhaps we can hope in a similar thing this time when the international break is coming up.
Yeah, I think there's a chance for that. I was going to ask you about Salah as well. I'll ask you a little bit more about him in a second. I just wanted to go back on Alexander-Arnold. Do you think that the lack of a genuine right-back competition for him is partly the reason to blame? We see with Robertson, he has similar cast pushing him. I know that Liverpool signed Calvin Ramsey, but he's been injured himself, and it would be asking a lot for somebody to come in from the Scottish League as a young player to push Trent. And the only other options are Milner or Gomez, neither of which are sort of natural in that right-back spot. Do you think that that's maybe part of the reason why he's had a slight drop-off, because maybe he feels comfortable and doesn't have the same competition that others in the squad have?
I think that might be part of the problem. If not competition, I think he plays too much. If he doesn't get injured, he starts every game. And if we could have a similar situation on the right side as we have on the left side with Tsimikas, we could rest Alexander-Arnold a bit more and make him firing on a more common basis now. Calvin Ramsey, of course, we signed him as a backup for Alexander-Arnold, but it's, of course, he's not ready to start in the Premier League yet. I think he's had maybe one or two seasons in the Scottish League and he's still a teenager. Joe Gomez is a decent backup, but since we had both Konaté and Matip out injured, he's been forced to play in the middle. And he is, of course, he is a central defender. He's not a right-sided defender. So I think if we could find a similar player to Alexander-Arnold to get the chance to maybe rest him a few times and pushing him to develop even better, I think Alexander-Arnold can take the next step. James Milner shouldn't play as a right in the defense anymore. We could see yesterday against Anthony Gordon that he couldn't. We got the problems every time Gordon had the ball against Milner. And I was happy that they didn't use him more often. If Milner is playing now, he should play in the midfield. And I've always been one of James Milner's biggest supporters, but even I have to realize that he can't play against quick attackers nowadays. He's about to be 37 years old and shouldn't be forced to defend one-on-one against 20-year-old Anthony Gordon. So perhaps we could find some backup player for Alexander-Arnold in the next window, but it's since we use Alexander-Arnold so much in the build-up, it's hard to find a player to have as a backup because we need to change so much when he's out. So it's almost like we should sign a good midfielder who could be able to play on the right side of our defense, that we have so we don't have to change our build-up too much. But as the situation is now, we rely on Alexander-Arnold a bit too much, and perhaps that makes him tired, and that he can't, and that leads to this lack of form that we are seeing now. I think that we will rest him perhaps on Wednesday against Napoli in the Champions League, so that he will be back at his best when we play Wolverhampton next weekend, because we need to win that game. And I think that Klopp will gamble a bit in the Champions League group stage and hope that we can maybe rest a few players and get out of the group anyway.
Yeah, and just quickly on Salah, I know you spoke a little bit there on maybe his form might be impacting Alexander-Arnold. Do you have any concerns about Salah sort of long-term? We've seen it before with players who sign these big contracts and then they sort of drop off. It happened with Aubameyang at Arsenal, Ozil at Arsenal. Maybe it's more of an Arsenal problem. The period of form for Salah does seem to have been going on a little bit longer than Trent. It sort of went on after the African Cup of Nations. He never sort of got back to that best in the world form that we saw pre-tournament. It seems churlish to be saying that should you be worried about his form long term when we were speaking this time last year about him being the best player in the world. But do you think there are sort of signs of longer term decline, and do you think that maybe the new contract might be looked back on as a bit of an error from Liverpool? Do you think that it's just way too soon to be talking about that?
Well, to be honest, I am a bit worried about Salah's form. If you look at his stats in the past year, they are good, and they have started this season good as well with a couple of goals and a few assists. But if you look at the whole games, he's out of the games a lot now, and one-on-one, he's not the same threat as he was a couple of seasons ago. He's more now of just, of course, it's important to score goals, but Salah was more than a goal scorer a few seasons ago. And I think that nowadays he's at his best in the penalty area where he can score. And when he run against the defender, yesterday he played against Everton he doesn't have the best back four, not the quickest back four, but still he couldn't manage to dominate the game as he usually do. So I have to say I'm a bit worried. Maybe it's unfair to him because he's been one of the best players in the league for many years. And of course he has to be out of form as well. And he's played a lot of football in the past seasons. It's easy to forget that he played the African Cup of Nations. He has been in the World Cup. And this time Egypt won't be in the World Cup. So he will get a month rest during the Qatar World Cup. And perhaps that will make him maybe come back at his best after the World Cup. But that half the season will be played. So perhaps it will be a bit too late for us if we want to win the league this season. But he's not old. Maybe he won't be as quick as he was when he signed for us, but he's a smart attacker, and I think he will keep on scoring goals. But perhaps it will be as a central attacker more in the coming seasons than on the right side, because it's in the penalty area where he is at his best. And nowadays, if he's on the right side, he's falling out of the games a lot. And since he's our star player, our best paid player, he should be the guy that you see when you watch Liverpool. And yesterday he was nowhere near his best when we needed him. But in the end, he had a shot against the post in the dying minute. So if that would have gone in, he would have been the hero. And I guess I wouldn't have been talking this way. But it's small margins. But I have to say, I'm a bit worried that he doesn't look as sharp and quick as he did a few seasons ago.
Yeah, it is small margins, and we are very outcome biased when we talk about players. So I guess it is still early, as it is with Liverpool with Salah. We'll see how it develops. Moving on to Spurs now, Steve. The games I've watched Spurs in this year, I've never really been totally impressed by them, but you can't really argue the points tally that you have. Do you think that, I guess it might be dangerous for the other top teams, that Spurs have still got a lot in the tank, and do you feel that yourself?
I think we're still at the point, Jake, where we're working out the best combinations, the best ways to play the players that we have. And I think it was interesting when I was listening to Thomas there talk about Salah and his struggles. It's exactly the same with Son. I mean, we have, you know, to use the old cliche, you know, form is temporary, class is permanent. And both Salah and Son, I think, are class players. And I think it's hard for a player to go, and this is the case for both of those players, it's hard for them to go from sharing the golden boot one season to actually having trouble getting off the mark the following season. And I think certainly for Sonny, because our team tends to reflect the way he and Harry play together. But our problem now, well, it's not a problem. It's a good problem to have. The thing is, Sonny has gone from playing in a two, playing very much in an identifiable pattern with Harry, to playing in any combination of the four with Kulusevski and Richarlison added to that mix. And actually, I think, as I say, it's still early days. We're still seeing Conte mess about with the structures a little bit, and there are a couple of things that he needs to figure out pretty quickly. But he has some games to work with it. But if you look back to the two games that we had this week, you know, yesterday's game against Fulham, and then the game in midweek against West Ham, they're like a perfect contrast for how Spurs make life difficult for themselves. I mean, for example, from what I saw, I listened to the Spurs game on the radio yesterday. I wasn't there, and I didn't see it until I saw the highlights on Match of the Day last night. But it looked like, you know, we were much better than just a one goal margin of victory in that game. And if you look at Son specifically in that game, he's still making the runs into the space. There was one run where he ran into the left side of the box and hit the bar. And if that had gone in, you know, everything would be different. Again, it's like what Thomas said about the what ifs with Salah. It's the same mentality. It's like he's adjusting to not just playing with Harry. But I think that spreads through the whole team. The fact that there are players in other positions that are working everything out. I mean, Perisic and Sessegnon on the left-hand side, for example, we're still working out how to get the best out of them. But going back to the West Ham game, that was a grinder. We really had to grind away at that game. And we lost concentration for a little bit. And I think that was probably the worst I've seen us play so far this season. But the Fulham game was a complete 180. On that, I mean, you could tell that there's fluency. There's a sense that, you know, we're moving into the space better. We're playing better on the break, which is how we normally play. And so I think that those two games encapsulate the struggles that we've had. When we're grinding, you know, we're lucky to get a point. And you know, to be honest, West Ham is a difficult place to go. So I'll take a point away from home at West Ham. Same with the point at Chelsea. We really battled for that. But when you see us play at home against somebody like Southampton or Fulham, where we're actually in gear and we're actually flowing, then that's the type of football that we need to be playing. And that's the type of football that people like Sonny and Harry and Kulusevski and Richarlison, I hope we'll see a lot more of him. But these are points that we didn't have last season. And so we're not going to gainsay them, but you know, we'll see how we go. The proof is in the eating, as it were.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about the Champions League, because that comes in this week. Is Tottenham returning to the competition? Is it the first time we played it since you reached the final?
Since 2019, yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah. So you've obviously that's going to be nice to be back in it. But Conte's famously never done well in European competition. How do you reckon he's going to sort of prioritise competition? Do you think he's going to want to do well in it, or do you think that maybe he's going to have one eye on the Premier League? Because I do think Spurs have got a very strong chance of maybe not challenging, but you know, City and Liverpool both started, they're both dropping points. There's a chance to at least be in the conversation when we break for the World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think he's going to, if I'm honest, I mean, what do I know? But I think he might well prioritise competitions after the group stage of the Champions League, because I caution my fellow Spurs fans really to this is not an easy draw. The you might think that Frankfurt, Marseille, and Sporting Lisbon are that's an easy draw. There are no easy draws in the Champions League at this stage. So I think he's gonna play it one game at a time, which you always have to do, especially in Europe. I mean, the key, I think, are the two games against Frankfurt. We go there and then they come here. So that turnaround, I think, will give us a good sense of what we need to do for the remaining two games. But it's good to be back in the Champions League and especially in the manner in which we got there. I think was hugely satisfying and gave us a platform on which to build. Give us also the sense that this was a team worth investing in, which I think was a hard sell to Enoch, as you know. I as far as making a pitch for the league title, I think it's way too early to even think about that. I know a lot of my Spurs friends had sort of thought, and again, this goes back to, you know, talking about who won the transfer window. When they did the deals early on in the transfer window, everybody said, oh, this turns us into a contender. It actually doesn't. It really doesn't. But what it does is it makes us more of a unit. It gives us an opportunity to actually blend together because they did the deals earlier and actually hopefully hit the ground running both in the Prem and in the Champions League. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we'll do in the Champions League. And I have a feeling that's the stage where Sonny is going to come good. And I suspect it might be also for Salah too.
Yeah, we'll move on to match previews now, as we are running a little bit out of time. We'll start with you, Thomas. Got a game against Napoli in the Champions League. Tough trip to Italy. What sort of team do you think Klopp's going to put out? And are you confident of starting your Champions League campaign with a win?
I think we'll see a bit of different players in this game, contrary to the game against Everton. Perhaps he will start after Mielu, who was signed on deadline day. And I know that Thiago is going to train tomorrow. Perhaps it's a bit early for him to start on Wednesday, but I think he will be at least get a few minutes. Diogo Jota came on as a sub yesterday. I think he might start. I think he will start Nunes as well. So we don't have the biggest squad now with the injuries, so he needs to rely on most of the players who started yesterday. But a few players can be rested. I think that Alexander Arnold will be rested so that Joe Gomez can play on the right and Matip in the middle. Robertson will probably be back. So I think it's the midfield where we'll see Arthur start, where we'll see the most changes. Of course, Cavallo went off injured, so he can't play. I think that he will rest Elliot as well, because he has played a lot of football at the start of this season, is still very young. And coming back from the tough injury he had last season, we need to play him in a smart way. So maybe it won't be the strongest team that we have, but hopefully it will be a team strong enough to get at least a point against Napoli. We've had some troubles against that team in the past in the Champions League. I think it's the third time we play them in the group stage. So I'm not confident that we will win, but I think we at least should manage to get a draw. And it's a bit of a different Napoli team that we play than we usually do, because they've lost a few key players in Koulibaly and the Mertens since we played them the last time. So I'm not sure about the quality of Napoli today, but it's usually a very tough away game and a big arena. So I hope we can get at least a draw so that we don't lose in the first game. Maybe 4 points from the first two games in the group stage is good. If we lose on Wednesday, we really need to win the game against Ajax at home, and that is the game before we play Chelsea away. So it's two important weeks coming up, and hopefully we can start next week by getting at least a point in Italy.
Yeah, same question to you, Steve. You start your Champions League campaign against Marseille at home. I guess you're confident of a win, given it's at home, but what sort of team do you think Conte is going to put out?
Well, no, I'm very happy that the first game's at home. You always back Spurs, I think, at White Hart Lane. Marseille are a really good team at the moment. They're on a very strong run, despite having changed their manager recently. But I'm looking forward to actually coming up against Alexis Sanchez again. But they seem to be winning comfortably in Liga at the moment. So who knows where we'll end up. I think our next two Premiership games are against Man City and then Leicester before we head into the international break. And I would rather have them the other way around, but obviously you can't dictate these things. I would really like Richarlison to start a game very quickly or very soon, just to get him into that role of leading the line the way he sort of traditionally does. But I don't think Conte will do that against Man City. I think he'll either bring Richarlison or Kulusevski off the bench again for that game. City are one of those teams that they're very like us in the way they play. They like to play out from the back, and because of that, we're both vulnerable to the counter sometimes. So I think it'll be a good test for us. Actually, as I say, we grinded against West Ham during the week, and then we didn't really make the most of the way we dominated the game against Fulham yesterday. So. Again, going to City, it's if you can get anything at all out of it, it's a good thing. The Marseille and Sporting Lisbon games, I think it's very much the unknown. Apart from you look at the team and how they're doing in their domestic league, and as I say, Marseille seem to be on a roll at the moment. So I certainly think we underestimate them to our detriment if we go down that road. But I think Conte's been around the block enough times to know that he won't underestimate a team, especially in the Champions League. So the Man City game, then the Leicester game. If we can get 4 points out of those two games, that's a good way to go into the international break, I think.
Yeah, with that, we are now out of time. So thanks so much for joining me today, guys. I'd just like to tell people where they can reach you.
Well, thanks for listening. My name is Thomas Nygren. You can find me on Twitter at Thomas Nygren. I write on a Swedish website called lfcsv.se. We also have a podcast called Total Liverpool Podcast, Both are mostly in Swedish. We have some content in English, but most of it is in Swedish. So if there are any Swedish Liverpool fans listening, make sure you visit our website or look or listen to our podcast.
Thanks very much for having me on, Jake. It was good to chat to you and Thomas. And you can get me on Twitter at Steve McGugan. And if you want to check out my current writing project, it's at statesofplayproject.com. And finally, all good wishes to Kevin, because I'm actually missing his wedding for a second time this weekend. I went to his wedding and got COVID, so I couldn't actually go to the ceremony. So I'm missing the reunion this weekend.
Yeah, obviously, good wishes to Kev at this time. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. You can get the show on Twitter at EPR Roundtable. Get me on Twitter at Jake Jackson. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us, and we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.